Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Oxford Biomedica Preliminary Results Conference Call. I would now like to hand the conference over to Shawn Slawson, CEO, and Stuart Paynter, CFO. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here with you this morning for our results for 31st December 2017, and we've had a very good year to talk about today. During the presentation, I'll be making statements looking forward which cannot be relied upon. With me today from the company are Stuart, our CFO, and Peter, our CBO. They'll be taking some questions later on. As we move forward, we'll be taking questions from the room at the end of the presentation and then to the lines afterwards. So into the presentation, for the 2017 operational highlights. On our vector delivery platform, we've signed two great deals in the last 8 months. First of all, Novartis, the second deal with them, we signed that in the middle of the year last year. A commercial supply agreement for Kymriah and further growth in the carts as well. This has been excellent for us going forward and brought us another $100 million over a 3-year period. Back in February, we signed a deal with Bioverativ in haemophilia, and they were $5 million up front, a much earlier stage project this one, for another $100 million collaboration over the coming years. And a great deal that one for us. The point of this is we now have collaboration of our work in ex vivo and in vivo with big partners. Now, I cannot stress enough how our market's changed over the last 12 months. The approval of Kymriah has been really big in this world of cell and gene therapy. Now, all big pharma companies are waking up to this and they're able to be involved. Our work in BD and our work activities and new collaborations has increased massively. Looking at our own products as well, we have had a significant increase in contact around our own products, our proprietary programs, which we'll cover later on, and we have quite a few customer data streams. We have continued to move these projects forward at modest investment, and we are trying to enhance value by doing this. We plan to start phase 1-2 trial in OTC-102 for Parkinson's. Around the middle of the year, we might have a partner in place by then. If we don't, we'll actually do it ourselves, and this point moving forward until we get to a partner lined up for that, and we'll see how what's going to go on that basis. Now, the increase in demand for vector has become profound. We've now been approved for commercial supply by the FDA and the MHRA, and we can also do clinical trial supplies as well. Because of this, we've recently raised money, and the whole fundraising there was actually put aside for new GMP suites and finishing suites as well. So we have a site which we've looked at, we've ready to go on, and we plan to find as quick as we can. We've also been awarded another Innovative UK grant to support our dentivector suspension technology development, and again, this is the future of the business. We've moved now most of our clients across from microstairs, we call it, so battery furnaces, the process speed, and bioreactors, and we plan to improve that process even further to something we call process speed for the future. Slide 4 takes you around to our strategy, and this slide's been used a few times before, but I do think it gives a very good snapshot of what we do. The backbone of our company is our lentivector delivery platform. That falls into four particular parts. First of all, the IT, the patents, and the know-how. I can't stress the importance of know-how because it gets brought way beyond the expiry of our patents doing that. Facilities, over the past 3 years, we've spent about £26 million on that. Going forward, we spent another 20.5 less cost, about 19.3, I think it is, on facilities for the new GMP suites in the next, about the next 18 months or 2 years. People-wise, we continue to grow. 80 people back in January 14, today about 330, by year end probably 400, and a very large increase again over 19 or so to keep up with what we're doing. One of the biggest parts though nowadays in our deals is having the quality as it is today. We've been approved by NIDA for Biotic Systems, but also approved by the MHRA and by the FDA now. And in fact, this is one of the real differentiators in our partners at this point in time. Model 4 is then divided into two parts. First of all, the partner programs, and here we can get multiple types of income streams, post-development fees, incentives there as well, manufacturing revenues, and fundamental to our business model, also royalties going forward in the future. And all the deals that fall under that category would be Orchard, New Design, Cryoverative, and Novartis. But it's key here we keep ahead of the game and make sure we offer customers the lab to customer or patient service we can offer today. No one else offers that, and we keep improving our processes. We now have the bioreactor working at 200 litre. We'll all go larger in the future as well for some of these bigger indications. But also analytics and vector engineering are really important to us. We'll keep driving those forward too. So the right-hand side of the page, we talk about our proprietary pipeline. As you're all aware, back in the last quarter of 2016, we actually decided to spin out our assets at the end of pre-clin, ready for phase 1-2 to go into trials. and we are following that strategy still, but we will start 102 if we don't have a partner in by then. This can bring us in the future development milestones where we require posting revenues, but I have to stress we're still bringing forward new ideas as well. We have a lot of assets at the base we're working on in the pre-clin stage, I should say the certain discovery stage is probably more best description at this point in time, ready to go into pre-clin. We prioritise those, work out what the best parts in the market, and we'll take them forward. And in the future, we'll take them forward to the end of pre-clin, then decide the best strategy after that to become effective afterwards. So I would stress these can be great value drivers for the future. On slide 5, our Novartis partnership, and again another deal done there. The deal back last summer was a $100 million deal, about $10 million of that fund. The balance is actually batches for us coming forward. We actually see great advances in the portfolio of Novartis here. We see, expectation is that we see Kymriah approved in the US for DLBCL by the end of the first quarter, and by the end of the second quarter, PDS-KLL and DLBCL approved in Europe. And again, DLBCL is a big driver for us because it has much larger number of patients, and of course, the largest part of Fibrator 2. We have successfully got working our Sunday Spy Reactor now with Novartis. They co-share costs with us on that, and that's a massive step forward in the cost of goods reduction for these production parts. We have further ways to reduce that for the future as well, but again, I think we have a lot of the endpoints we're trying to get from Novartis are now in place. Over the page, again, new deal with Bioveritas, very exciting deal that. As I've often said, these deals don't come about in 3 days. This has been probably 18 months of work to get to where it is today. You might imagine I had to do 6 hours when I saw some notifying Bioveritas very close to getting signed, but they were put at ease quite quickly on that one, but it wasn't something we were aware of beforehand. Mercy had been a very good partner in the past, so we're quite confident that deal should progress very well. It's a product development agreement. It's working with Factor 8 and Factor 9 for haemophilia A and B. We've given a lot of exclusivity to our IP here. Again, we've got a $5 million upfront, and we'll get another $100 million over the coming years, and this will be made up of a couple of patches for product development, regulation, sales-related milestones. So the market here is currently around $6.7 billion. It's forecast to grow to $8 billion by 2026, and we think this treatment could be very disruptive in this market should it be successful. So we're very excited where this could take us. Again, I think it's a good validation of what we do. We have an advanced ex vivo now, and again, a good validation here to Bioveritas for in vivo work as well. Slide 7 sets out what we see as a snapshot of the market going on in Lenta Vector. This is not all of the companies working in Lenta Vector pre-clinical clinical trials, it's just a few of them. The red circles show the guys we're working with at this point in time, and we plan to have more circles in the near future. We can interview back in November. I can remember, well, in Singapore on a very bad line to New York to speak to Gina Colata and the New York Times. She did a lot of work around vector needs for the market, talked to lots of companies, and talked to us as well. And she came to the conclusion it's very hard to make. I agree with that. The barriers to entry are very high. I would agree with that also. And the guys who can make it will be in great demand. And I think I agree with that too. We have seen a lot of demand coming into us to work in this area since Bernie the group came here last summer. It's been a step change in activities. The little graph there shows the number of staff starting in Lenta Vector over the last few years, and I think that will continue to grow. And I think we have an offering for customers, which I think is a slide further down, which I think I'm sure from his slide, talk about what we offer. And again, the offering we have is what you need, being that we can engineer someone's own drug from their lab into our lab, optimize it, take it to our GMP suite, first of all, for clinical trials, and then at some point in time in the future, then commercialize it as well. And we can do this, rather offering, as far as we know, there at the moment, offering a 2-liter bioreactor and ultimately bigger as well. On slide 8, the product pipeline, this portion is 3 parts. And the first part we'll talk about here would be our partner program, where we support partners that have this long-term product interest going forward. As far as today, you see 3 lines. That's the CCL19 has 2 indications. The second one is getting very close to the market now. Should be in the US, we have very, very soon. We also have this second drug, which I can't talk to you about legally, but if you get on the Bioveritas website, you can see fairly quickly. Progressing well with immune design, which is therapeutics, we believe ADS-Kid with them should be the second dangerous drug on the market in the world. We'll have the first 2, and they are moving forward finding the BLA late in 18. GSK, again, they have access to our patents, so they've got to what orphan disease is, and again, that's over moving forward quite well. And of course, our new babies, hemophilia A, hemophilia B, with Bioveritas, which has been closed now to be promoted. So again, very, very exciting, and our potential market to get these forward seems very significant. Also, a proprietary product, and the world of Parkinson is very exciting, but HB-182. We have a lot of interest in the data room, and I'd say certainly more than two companies in that at the moment, and taking it very seriously, and we are very excited about where that product can go. We believe it can make a massive difference to patients' lives. We are working also on a spin-out of our ophthalmology drugs for the US venture capital partners currently, and taking those forward. But also, we have interest in data room around our CARP-524, which is the OTV-302 for multiple sclerosis tumors. So again, very exciting. Bottom of the page, you have the two drugs we developed some time ago, which we licensed to Sanofi, Stargardt, which is syndrome 1B, and one of those will be leading to pivotal trials by the end of 2018. So moving forward now, I'll ask Stuart to talk about financials.
Thank you, John. Again, welcome everyone. So how of the all the things that John has just talked about, how's that translating into our numbers? So on slide 10, you see the financial highlights for the year. 28% increase in gross income. So again, that's quite a continued impressive top line growth. As John said, we are looking to, we've just done a fundraise to expand our bioprocessing capabilities in order that we can keep the momentum in our revenue growth going. We've still got the capacity this year for solid revenue growth, but then we're sort of constrained in 19 if we hadn't have done what we've just done. So what we see is a very positive route forward for the company, and we'll take you through the context of that decision later on in my financial review. The second point is 12% decrease in operating expenses. So what we've really done here is we've ended the right sizing, which John talked about at the end of 2016 when we talked about cutting the cash burn to make ourselves a more sustainable company going forward. We've finished that right sizing now. So we've got to the base. And what we'll do now is we'll make those strategic investments in the capabilities we need to drive this business forward. You can't cut your way to success. And, you know, in a growth market, which we are, and we can obviously see on our top line there, we need to make sure that we have the people and the resources, the equipment, the automation, the analytics, as John said, in place in order to keep us on the cutting edge, in order to push us forward in the market lead position we have. Point three, EBITDA. So the EBITDA loss was 1.9 million for the year. The thing to remember here is that, as John's already talked about, the Bioverity deal came with a £4 million licensing fee up front, which will be an easily recognisable as revenue. So as we are approaching the zero mark for EBITDA here, we are seeing some big binary events that could push us one way or another. If Bioverity happened to have closed before the year end, which we were hoping it would, it would have been a £2 million positive EBITDA rather than a £2 million negative EBITDA. But so, you know, the trend is the thing to look at here. And you can see we've moved from 7.1 loss to 1.9 loss. And, you know, we continue to look forward to strong financial performance in the years to come. Again, on an EBITDA basis, where we add back our tax credit, we hit profitability in the year. The operating loss, which is essentially after everything, was reduced by 50%. So that goes to a test of the revenue growth and the strategy of making sure we're right size of the expenses. Cash, which has obviously always been king for Oxford Biomedica and will continue to be king for the short term, we had an inflow before financing activities this year, so that's probably the first time in our history we've been able to achieve that. The outflow was reduced by 9.2 million in the year. So again, what we're doing in terms of the strategic imperative the board set at the end of 16, crystallised in 2017, and it's put us in a really good, strong position to build from going forward. Capital expenditure there, as you can see, fairly self-evident. We, as John mentioned, we spent a lot previously on the laboratories, on our head office. We've hit 2017, which was a slight lull year, but then, you know, it's a bit of the calm before the storm. We've now got another £19.3 million we just raised to spend on new facilities, and we'll spend that as we move forward over the next 18 to 24 months in order to provide ourselves with that capacity we need to keep growing. And I'll take you through the expansion case in a few slides time. Cash, you can see there wasn't much change between the 2 year ends. It's worth noting that as of today, our cash balance is £33 million. because of the last point on there, the fundraise, the money's come through. So the one thing we haven't noted on this slide, which is worth commenting on, is the loan, which was refinanced during the year to more favourable terms. This was signed in June, so we're fast approaching the 1 year anniversary of the loan. Now lots of things have changed in the last 9 months even. So we've now got a commercial supply agreement with solid revenue streams on a launch product. We have royalty streams flowing. As a board, we will keep reassessing our financing options, and we'll see where that takes us going forward in the year. But, you know, it's a stepping stone from Overland to Oak Tree. That was a positive step, and we've got a number of steps we need to take to reflect the financial strength of this company going forward. So if we just flip on to the next slide, which is my pictory slide for me. Slide 11. So again, the top two charts are both income and how we're looking at the different splits. The first one will probably, the top left slide you probably won't see again. So as we move forward, our revenues, not other operating income, the other operating income will become smaller and significant, and we'll just be talking about our revenues, which will be a nice step forward. The top right-hand slide is actually a much more interesting slide. So this is split between what we consider to be sort of ongoing revenues in the light blue, which is bioprocess and commercial development, which is our ongoing operational business. And then in the purple, you have those lumpy things that I mentioned on the bioreactive licensing deal. And so even though there's some consistency in those lumps, we try to generate revenue through those lumps. Until we grow our way out of that, we are going to be relatively lumpy in nature for the next year or two. Those purple things are really good for us. They typically come at 100% margin. It's something we're driving towards, both growth in the light blue section, which is ongoing operational business, which we essentially enable through our capital expansion, and the licensing incentive grants, which come through business development and our interactions with government. The bottom chart is our EBITDA, which is the sort of section of earnings that we look at, which we add back the tax credit we get, which is essentially a rebate on the R&D work we do. And you see that we've made a modest profit there in the year, but again, the trend is the thing to look at. So, you know, that's impressive rebalancing in the business, and we're in a strong position to move forward. So if we flip over the page to slide 12, segmental analysis. Worth commenting here, we've made a small change to the way that we look at the segments. We are now matched our segments to that strategic slide that John put up earlier. So we look at our platform segment, our product segment, and the way to, as a rule of thumb here, if it's our gene, our proprietary product in the delivery mechanism, it's the product segment. Hence, OXP-102 would be in there. All of our proprietary products, the Sanofi ocular assets, would be in there. And our early stage discovery team are in there. And then the platform segment, which is the work the work around the Lenti delivery platform. So if it's other people's assets and we're enabling them through our delivery system, then that's where the platform segment will come. And you can see that with a fully loaded allocation of all costs across the business, you'll see that in 2017, the platform segment broke even. So again, that is the segment which our capital expansion will enable to grow further. And as you can see, the trend is a good one there. The product segment reflects more of a pure play development company, as it were. And as John said, a bit more lumpy and risky in nature, but we think we've got some great assets in the portfolio currently. Some really interesting assets coming forward to early stage discovery, and this could be a big binary event that can happen that can increase the value of the company. So we've got two approaches to success here, and we believe in both, and there are good synergies between the two. So this is the way we're going to look at the business going forward. Slide 13. So here we're moving into a little bit of context to the future. So when we talk to the potential investors and the investors indeed about our capital expansion, these are the sorts of numbers we were talking about and our opportunity to grow in the future. You know we don't give forward-looking guidance, but this is a bit of context around the marketplace. So the graph on the right there is for the Lenti manufacturing market. This is purely manufacturing of the lentiviral vector, essentially. These are our numbers because it's an embryonic market. There are no external market data that we can currently get. But we think in 2017, the market was about $200 million. Very fragmented. If you look at the graph below, which is very small, apologies for that. But you can see that you can basically separate this graph up into 2x2 on commercial revenues and quality systems and capabilities. You see us at the top right there as the only commercially approved lentiviral vector supplier in the world. You can segment this competitive landscape into three. There are the big guys, the Lonzas, the Wujis, who can do a batch if you take them a process. In the bottom left, you'll see the academic institutions who can do you a batch in a non-GMP environment. And they're not very efficient, but they'll do you a few patient doses for early stage and preclinical work. And then you have us and our competitors, who would be people like Brammer, BioReliance, MolMed, Novacept, Lentigen. And we see ourselves in that universe. We have advantages over those guys that we have the bioreactors working to scale. We have a commercial agreement, so we have a process approved by the FDA. We believe we're a number of years ahead of them in terms of innovation, and we need to keep running to keep ahead of them. But where we see this market going is that, as John showed you earlier, the amount of clinical trials now ongoing is going to lead to clinical batches and, in the end, commercial batches. And we see that, and I don't think this is a stretch to say that we think the market will be about $800 million by 2026, which is a 15.4% CAGR over that time period. And we're currently running maybe 20% of market share, and we think we can get up to 25 or 30% of the market share as the market defragments, as it grows, and people come to the innovators for preclinical batches and commercial batches. And so, if you work that number out in 2026, what we're telling people is we're hoping we're going to get a 25 to 30% share of $800 million, which is between $200 and $250 million, which just for the bioprocessing, that doesn't include the milestones, that doesn't include any revenues from our proprietary products, that doesn't include licenses, doesn't include royalties. So that's the goal we're aiming for. Hence, on page 14, why we looked at expansion plans and went for a fundraise recently. So our expansion plans were such that what we wanted to do, we currently have 3 GMP suites, we want to build another 4. We want to incorporate fill finish into our portfolio of services because we see that as a risky proposition. We currently outsource, and of course the fill finish guys have to be FDA approved as well. And it's much easier for us to do that soup to nuts type service. And it may involve the product only being frozen once rather than twice, and there could be ancillary benefits for that. And cold chain warehouse facility and storage and office space. We've identified a facility, as John mentioned. We're getting close to being able to pull the trigger on that. The total size of the facility is 84,000 square feet, which puts it comparable to some of the smaller Lonza sites, certainly the Bluebird site in North Carolina, some of our competitors I just mentioned. We would only use roughly half of that for what we just what I've just mentioned in terms of what we're going to put into it, which future-proofs us. So in a modular fashion, and you can do the math, in a modular fashion we can add a clean room or two whenever we choose. We have plenty of room. The utilities will already be in. It will be a year start to finish to do such a thing. So, we think we're in a good spot to be able to really be reactive to the market demands going forward. We are using the same people that put together Yarnton in terms of facility design and contracting. They successfully got that facility from empty warehouse to validated batches in about 12 and a half months on budget. So, we've got some trusted partners we've identified. And as I said, $19.3 million has been raised. this is to enable us to keep on growing that bioprocessing line. So on slide 15, a little bit about the financial outlook. You know, we continue to expect to grow strongly on the revenue lines. We've got our three GMP suites that are fully operational. As John said, we Bioverativ now and our other deals, Novartis and Orchard. We have some really good profit-generating deals going with long-term interest in the royalty base on all of those deals. And, of course, the excitement in the next few months is going to come through Kymriah and its label extensions and expansion into new geographies and new therapeutic areas. In terms of our infrastructure, as I mentioned, we still have the ability to grow in 18. We need to deconstrain that growth in 19, which is what we're doing and why we've just done what we've done on the fundraising side. As John mentioned, the grants, I mean, we find ourselves front and centre in the government's industrial strategy, which is really good for us, and we're finding support through them through grant funding and other things. And, you know, again, we believe that we can generate real value through both arms of our business. And if we choose to take OSB-102 into the clinic half year, because we haven't got a partner in place by then, we are more than happy to do that in order to generate that value and keep that for ourselves. And we are strong enough now to be able to go ahead and do that. As John said, you know, Peter can attest to that. I mean, the business development world has really taken off since the launch of Kymriah, and lots of people now want to get into gene therapy, because gene therapy is now, I know it's a bit of a corny title at the front of this presentation, but it's true. And, you know, partnering discussions will keep on going for our programs, and we'll look to spend potentially on new therapeutic areas, new genes, and new technologies to keep ourselves on the forefront, because innovation is key here. I've said we think we're a couple of years ahead. You know, we won't be a couple of years ahead if we slow down. So now we need to invest in the innovation, which we've now, you know, started to build our brand on. And we need to keep innovating through process B into process C and D and then into the future. And with that, I'll hand back over to John for a summary.
Thanks, Jeff. Just going to our news flow slide then, looking forward about 12 to 18 months here. On the partner program, from Novartis, I've spoken already about the launch date for DLBCL and pediatric in the US and pediatric ALO and DLBCL in Europe. Again, our launch streams will get a lot stronger with this coming forward. But also, during that period, we'll see the second part program going to the clinic and potentially a third coming down as well. So, very exciting work there. Orchard Therapeutics will see the BLA file in the second half of 2018. Moving on to Bioverativ, we've been working with them now for quite a long time already, about 18 months or so, but we are working very hard to get them to the clinic as quick as we can. So we'll gather pace now. Onto our own delivery platform, our funnel of feasibility work has been quite full for quite a long time, so we're working on that. We expect to do further deals into 2018 and into 2019. I won't ever be drawn on time again, having had Bioverativ sit back over the year last year, but we're confident we'll get something out of 2018. And of course, the platform. The platform is key to us, it's what we do, and we'll make sure that is at the forefront of all activities and making sure that we are the guys who come through every time. For our in-house products, we've already talked about starting a clinical trial with a partner or on our own for 102 around the middle of the year, but also working hard to bring out the other assets or license them out to pharma companies when appropriate. Again, we think it's a really drive value for the business. So over the page, there's the last slide, some summary. We are a world-leading gene cell therapy company, and we are uniquely positioned now in the multi-billion dollar sector of gene cell therapy with its expertise in the critical supply vector. Also, we've now validated in vivo and ex vivo, some great deals, some great names behind us. We've got Sanofi, Bioverativ, and Emergy, of course, Novartis, of course, and Orchard going forward. What this does give us is multiple possibilities of going forward with partners and in our own drug opportunities. The vector platform can be used in many, many ways, in vivo and ex vivo, and we have opportunities that we have to almost have work through to pick the best ones because we have so many. So a very exciting time for Biomedica, and we have great expectations for our first deal in 2018. Any questions from the room, please?
Thank you. Our first question comes from the line of Joe Pat Guinness. Please ask your question.
Hi, Joe. How are you? Thanks for getting up early.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, guys. Sorry, I was on mute. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you.
Hey, sorry, apologize for that. So congratulations on the progress. Good morning. Couple things. Just wanted to focus on the internal progress there, especially for OXB-102. So obviously, John, you mentioned that you have a couple guys or more in the data room with regard to looking at the asset. With regard to your plans of running a phase 1-2 as an example, was this a request of any of the people in the data room versus your choice to be able to ascribe more value to the asset as you generate more clinical data? So that's the first question. And then the second question with that is, can you provide any visibility now with regard to the clinical trial, with regard to the design and the potential timing of data? Thanks.
First of all, the question you've asked there is how we're being driven to do this. We are in a position where we think starting it will enhance value. So starting it is good for the company. We believe we have a very good success for this particular trial. And certainly, I think the partners that we're talking to want this to move as quickly as possible. And whilst they haven't categorically said start the trial, they'll be pretty pleased if we do. So does that answer the first part of the question?
It does, thank you.
On the second part, I'd rather not go too open that today. We are looking at various ways of starting this trial. We're still waiting for regulatory approvals on some of the things we've asked for, which has a couple of variables in there as well. So until we have it approved, I'd rather not disclose what we're working on, if that's okay with you.
No, understood. It is a competitive area. And then just lastly, from a financial standpoint, when you look at the expansion now of the facilities, especially with the new raise, I guess in case you didn't cover this, I just want to make sure I'm clear, how much of the new facilities would be for new products, new assets versus existing?
Again,
hi, Joe. It's Stuart. It's a good question. I mean, what we've done is given ourselves optionality going forward. So 100% of the money raised is going to be used to build the facility. That's point one to note. But secondly, there is some product risk around some of the things we're doing. So for example, our bioverative association now with hemophilia, they've got to go through into phase 1-2, and there'll be clinical batches there, and then phase 2, and there'll be clinical batches there, and then ultimately a commercial supply agreement. And what we're looking to do is put a portfolio of customers, old and new, together to give us, enough surety that we can more than fill the facility. And so it's a bit of a mealy-mouthed answer, John, sorry, but the way we look at this is manifold. In that we are assessing all of our current needs and some of our future needs. And we think, even in the worst case, this facility will more than pay for itself.
No, I think you certainly answered it, especially from your portfolio approach. So thanks a lot for the information, guys.
Thanks, Joe.
I have one
line. So if there are no more questions from the line, perhaps we can move to questions from the room.
Sir, we do have another question from the audio.
Okay.
If you have Peter Welford, please ask your question.
Hi, I've got a few questions, actually, if I may. Firstly, on 102, just trying to understand that, I think you say in the press release, if I'm reading it right, it was Cambridge and London were the sites. I think originally you used Cambridge and Paris, I might be wrong on that. And I guess I'm just curious as to the change in sites and whether or not this is just to require UK approval or whether there's anything we should be reading into that. And if you could possibly give us the approximate sort of cost we should be thinking Oxford Biomedica's, I guess, willing to invest yourselves in this phase 1-2. I'm not necessarily asking for the cost of the trial, but I guess, well, what sort of magnitude roughly is the cost, do you think, of doing this work?
Okay, so taking the first part of the question, our original sites under Professor Pelfrey in Paris were originally Paris and then to London, so Cambridge I should say. After that, we're looking for a third site. We're coming on to London and Cambridge first on this occasion. The approvals in France will take longer, so Paris will come into the trial later on. That makes the first part?
Yeah.
Second part, it's modest spend. I would say in the first 2 years, each year would be in the region of £1.5 to £2 million, something like that, spend on the project. And that will give us probably some cohort one and potentially getting close to cohort two data.
But great, and then...
We might want to part with it by then anyway, so it becomes irrelevant.
All right, and then just a few quick financial ones, if you don't mind, Stuart. It's somewhat semantic, but the gain and the impairment charge, were they booked in the product or the platform segment, if you like? And also, where is the impairment, if you don't mind, in the P&L in terms of the different lines of the P&L? And then could I also ask you, Novartis, could you disclose what the total revenue was from Novartis, or gross income, whatever it is, payable from Novartis? I guess that's your biggest customer, so presumably it's going to be disclosable eventually. Thank you.
No problem. So the impairment was about £1 million of impairment on a very old asset that failed phase three. I think it was called some Prime Boost. Prostac. Okay, and that went through in just sort of that the amortization charge for the year. So that would be in the where you'd see the depreciation and amortization. In terms of where that went, and then you asked about the gain, which was a gain on our investment in Orchard. Orchard did a Series B round of financing, and they did it at a multiple of the original price. And so we increased the gain there, and again you'll see that as a gain on investment in the detail of the analysis that will be published in the annual report. In terms of platform and product, essentially the Orchard gain will be in the product, because we are, you know, they are a product customer of a platform customer of ours, not product, platform customer of ours. And in terms of the impairment, that would have just gone through into a general and been allocated equally between the two. So, because it's so far down the line and it didn't have any particular affiliation to either product or platform, that will go into the general pool of costs to be split. In terms of the Novartis relationship, I mean, that's not something we discuss right now. It may become discussable in the future. But, you know, the closest you can get to that in our financial statements would be looking at the geographical analysis of our revenues. And you'll see that, you know, Europe forms a chunky part of that. And that will continue to be the case going forward. So what you can read into that, I'll leave you with that. At some point, we may give more colour, but we're choosing not to do that at the moment.
Thank you.
Okay, no more on the calls on the line. Amy.
I have four, so I might ask them once a time.
Probably the best thing, yeah.
On the Bioverisis deal, I assume it's $100 million of milestones. How should we think about the margin of the growth level?
Typically, there are nominal costs assigned to some of the milestones. I think that sort of level of nominal costs will go forward. So I'll leave it to you to think about what I mean as nominal, but it's not a substantial cost that goes forward. So it's in the 90% margin for the market.
And so then, what about
I mean, it's true. I mean, I think John mentioned earlier the headcount numbers for this year, for example, are going from 330 to about 400 as we build out the infrastructure for the business. You are correct to say that every time a new deal is signed,
we need people to work on the applications that our customers would like us to work on. So where, you know, you're then into the whole business world of can that be absorbed or do we need incremental new heads? What we need to be doing as a business is sort of getting ahead of the game now and being able to have well-staffed groups of people in well-defined areas whose responsibilities to achieve the goals of our customers are well set and to have the capability to add new customers. So whilst we can't directly say, right, this is going to be for a biodiversity milestone, this is going to be for an Novartis milestone, this is going to be for an Orchard milestone, you know, we have groups working and the resources fit around. But I think the best indication is the fact that we're growing the headcount in that manner. So from 330 to 400 this year is telling you something about where we are in terms of the investment levels needed to achieve some of the new fields and to future-proof us going forward. But, you know, we hope that then we can add new deals incrementally at lower cost. But at the moment, we're building off a base. Yeah, I hope that answers your question.
And then, just issue of biodiversity at the moment, the volume of data that's required to teach us is much higher than we can in the field marketing program. And I was wondering how that's going to work in practice. Do you price all your batches the same across all of your customers and expect that those customers who happen to need more batches will then find a way to pass that through to their customers? Or are you going to need
Yeah. Well, it is true that more vector is needed for in vivo large organ therapies than would be for the brain or the eye or CAR T's. Part of our challenge for the bioreactive deal is to bring down the cost of vector. So they are starting in the bioreactor, right, which is a tenfold increase from the old cell factory process. We have other technologies, as you've heard us mention TRIP before, which is looking pretty good in the preclinical package for this particular product, which will bring, you know, multiple folds of cost decreases down. You know, part of the challenge is to make this commercially viable. So even if we get a great gene at the end of this, it still needs to be commercially viable for the partner. The second part of the question was the batch pricing. We don't release our batch pricing, but we can tell you that we do price per batch. So the sort of company we once were, we had our customers take the risk. So we would produce a batch and it would have to, you know, have a between a number of patient doses in, could be high, could be low. So as long as there's been a couple of boundaries, we'd get paid for that. And of course that meant that the customers who were much bigger and stronger than us could take the risk. We're not ruling out going to a per dose model in the future, but that's not our current model. So our current model is still pricing per batch. Certainly that's the deal with Bioverative. And it's up to us working with Bioverative to get the cost of vector down to a point where it becomes a commercially viable product. So there are two things to do. Firstly, show its efficacy safe and potentially curative, as it could be. And secondly, make it commercially viable. And we're involved in both of those. And both of those are equally as important as each other to get to market in the time frame of Bioverity if you want to get there.
Important to point out, we embed new IP in there as well, so with the Bioverity deal, if it's embedded in the deal, it works, we get a higher royalty.
And just to clarify, there is no guarantee
that
your
customers
will be charged
the
same amount per batch
if one customer is
another. You negotiate
a contract on the same. No. But it is, that's correct. But they are within bounds. I mean, we don't have completely different batch prices for one and the other. They are, you know, there's a list price and there's some negotiation. But as long as the economics work out for us, you know, in terms of the batch pricing, the royalty rates, the milestones, you know, we can be relatively flexible. But we can't, we don't do, you know, millions and millions and millions and then 10,000. I mean, it doesn't work like that. Yeah.
How much of your budget is covered quantify that. I don't know what the number is, but you know.
The answer is yes. We can't be talking about it. It's going too far to talk about that. It's
very technical
information.
But what we should say is that if you look at our order book for the year now, you know, there isn't a lot of variability in it for 2018. I mean, we are booking batches out to 6-9 months, which is actually, you know, part of the issue we have in terms of our capacity constraints. Why we need to release that, because we have customers come to us and say, we want a batch in 6 months. And we know they really can't get a batch in 6 months because they're not going to be ready rather than us. But, you know, if we have demanding customers, which is correct, and we have to be in a position to serve them, and so we need to be, you know, keep our nimbleness so we can't. A backlog's great, but a backlog of 2 years is no good, but then you can't react to new customers. So, you know, this is the balance we're trying to find with the capital expansion.
Hi, just wanting on the CapEx trend, could you give some guidance to how that 19 million is going to go out in the next 3 years? Is it front loaded or back loaded?
So this is a tricky one because we're going through the technical design phase now. But this will all be spent in, say, the next 24 months. I looking at this year, I mean, these are rough guides. So I would say if you went with 884, you wouldn't be far away. 8 this year, 8 2019, or the next year maybe. But we'll know more when we've done technical drawings and we've had the real details come through. But you're not going to be a million miles away, that's
understood. And then a point of clarification, you say quite clearly upfront payment you view as you're going to take them on board as a single item, very much so for $5 million in prior boutique. But I noticed in note 2, the Novartis, where I was expecting it to be $10 million upfront.
Yeah.
You spread that over 3 years.
Yeah, so even though there's an upfront, it depends what the upfront is for. So the Bioverity, it was for a license, which had no further contractual obligations for us, so that's what we consider on revenue recognition to be recognisable. In Novartis, there were some other things, which Tom mentioned were commercially sensitive, and we worked with our auditors to make sure that we were sticking to our revenue recognition policies, and that we think that our breakfast things come in terms of revenue recognition, we don't think it's going to make a material difference to us. We think we're sort of complying with those rules anyway. So it depends what Peter and his team put in that up front, and the Novartis was given to buy
everything. So, you know, if a future deal comes through on a case-by-case basis, and you make a clearing statement, whether it's an upfront, to be recorded as a year or spread?
Yeah, I mean, we will make it as clear as we can based on the commercial sensitivities,
yeah.
But then, yeah, part of my job is to make sure that you're all aware of quite how we're working and, you know, to provide some broad guidance on that.
You're just up with a C. I mean, is that just going to trip? Is that trip large bioreactors?
I mean, from a combination of and more. I mean, basically trip, obviously, you determine the bioreactors can go to 500 to 1,000 to 2,000 for the right drug, for the right use of vector. Trip's very important to us. It seems like we're working quite a few lens vector products and a lot of AAV products as well. We're working on a lot of other things in the background as well. No, we're going to process B first.
Yeah. But you know, as process C comes on board, it'll probably be incremental to process B. So it's not going to be a complete new thing. It's going to be innovations around process B, which will move it on by an order of magnitude, hopefully.
But again, I mean, active guys have plans for DE, and it's a lot of steps forward as well. We have to keep ahead of the game to make sure we get deals here. The best service we believe currently is the optimization of the drug and taking it forward, but then we need to make sure we keep ahead of the game, but on the vector analysis, on the yield, the vector engineering, and basically bring down cost of goods for vector profession.
Just think about obviously vector time, given the last deal. Therefore, you might think about what they expect for the numbers next year. But how the guidance works, probably quite difficult
been a very detailed process whereby they let us know pretty, again, just flexibility because they paid the $10 million up front on the deal last summer to actually have some flexibility and orderly, but we have a fairly rigid process to know what's coming up.
And it is worth noting that they're currently on press A for the Kymriah approval, and they'll move sometime in the near future to process B to give them more flexibility, more patient doses, etc. So what we can tell you is when they're at peak sales, the royalties become as interesting, if not more interesting, in terms of profit than the bioprocessing revenues. So I leave you with that slightly enigmatic answer, because of course the royalties are 100% margin, and the bioprocessing comes with a decent CDMO plus margin, which we don't disclose, but somewhere down the line. I mean, they are confident that those numbers can be reached. The logistics, if they're soluble, we will solve them with the last of my notes, but we'll help them get them.
Amy?
You had a fourth, didn't you, Amy?
I don't know whether this is really fair to ask you it without hearing the phrases, but I'll try
it
anyway.
We'll try to
teach it. Yeah.
So Voyager has been data from their program last week, which had a bit of a mixed reception because there wasn't a clear focus on relationships. I don't really know the degree to which they properly worked through that data, but I think there was some mutterings about the discommunities that resulted from the company's administration of the Voyager conduct that was really what was driving their problem at that time. I just wondered, I know you guys don't as much explode yourself data. Does that help, kind of help, what comfort can you give us? Because that's not going to be okay.
As you can imagine, we had a full update on this the other day and stuff. I'm
expecting that. Well, I mean, one of the interesting things about the voice data is that it comes out of the session. We're not going to publish the data with a normal clinical endpoint. But I think what you can see reflects what we've always felt is the key distinguishing difference between 102 and our product and voice product. What we set out to do is to make dopamine and to make dopamine in a way where we get the same tonic level of dopamine, which is way easier to distinguish between the patient's brain. If you don't have the capacity or the ability to make dopamine, then the alternative to what Voyager is doing is that they deliver one enzyme that allows you to still use cell data exogenously. But the they cycle to the consumer, but I think what the Voyager data has shown is that they can see a therapeutic window that looks actually quite narrow. We were speculating about yesterday, so this is probably the first gene therapy trial where we've now seen a maximum tolerated dose that's been demonstrated. So whether that therapeutic window is going to turn out to be something that's commercially useful, I think only time can find itself. Clearly the market didn't like it, but again, it's only just a natural.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.
Thanks on the phone.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.